This talk was given by Bear Gokhan Bonnebacher at the Zen Center of New York City. Gokhan is a senior monastic in the Mountains and Rivers Order, coordinator for the National Buddhist Prison Sangha, and the head of operations at Zen Mountain Monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or to find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Good morning. So, this is a Thanksgiving talk. Because of the holiday, I've been thinking about the holiday. I'm sure a number of you have read something about the history and the false history of Thanksgiving, uncovering the kind of deconstructing the myths and uncovering the truth that really that the myth that the story was created to cover, the genocide really that it was created to cover, and feeling the discomfort of this, that I have believed parts of this myth, have identified with parts of it. On Thursday at the monastery, we did a new service. We have a community meal, and we do a service in the Zendo before the meal. And Shugen Roshi and Hojin Sensei created a new liturgy that was quite moving, that was acknowledging the day as a day of remembrance, remembering that who was here before us, remembering what has happened, remembering the false stories that we've been taught, a day of atonement, and a day of gratitude. And so, you know, I was thinking about that as a way of, so how do we use this day? We have this day. We have this holiday. How do we use it in a way that is helpful, that's true? It's a beautiful holiday, right? A holiday of giving thanks, of cultivating appreciation, being together, appreciating what we have. And so in thinking about giving thanks, I have been thinking about the practice of cultivating gratitude, the practice of giving thanks. And so I wanted to talk about a teaching from the Tibetan tradition called the Four Mind Changings. These are sometimes referred to as the Four Remembrances, but I like the Mind Changings because I think they're really, they're speaking to practice, right? We are in practice changing our mind, right? Changing our way of, changing our view. And in the Tibetan tradition, they're usually presented as preliminaries. And so often they're kind of enumerated at the beginning of a teaching. And so their way of kind of preparing us to hear a teaching, preparing us to receive a teaching, preparing us to practice. And we do this in our tradition, right? So before a talk, we chant. Or if a teacher is giving the talk, we bow, right? Before we go to face-to-face teaching, as we go into face-to-face teaching, we do a series of bows. Right? We're preparing ourselves to receive the teachings. And during liturgy, we bow first, making an offering, and preparing ourselves, preparing our mind. And all of these are practice themselves, practice itself. So we do bows to prepare our mind, to prepare to hear the teachings, and bowing in itself is a practice. And so as I was working with these four mind changings, I was appreciating how they, in a sense, lay out practice, lay out the path, important aspects of the teachings and of how we can take, how we can use the teachings in our own life. And so the first of the mind changings is appreciating this precious human body that we have, appreciating this precious human life that we find ourselves in. Shantideva, the Indian master, says, "So hard to find such ease and wealth whereby to render meaningful this human birth. If now I fail to turn it to my profit, how could such a chance be mine again? As when a flash of lightning rends the night and in its glare shows all the dark black clouds had hid, likewise, rarely, through the Buddha's power, virtuous thoughts rise, brief and transient in the world. Thus behold the utter frailty of goodness. Except for perfect bodhicitta, there is nothing able to withstand the great and overwhelming strength of evil. Those who wish to overcome the sorrows of their lives and to put to flight the pain and sufferings of beings, those who wish to win such great beatitude should never turn their back on bodhicitta." And so bodhicitta means the mind of enlightenment, the mind that seeks the way, the mind that seeks to be awake. So citta means mind. And so Shantideva is exhorting us to rejoice in our good fortune, to acknowledge our good fortune. To having encountered the Dharma, to have the leisure and the ability to study and practice. That we have relatively good health, relative soundness of mind. That we're able to engage practice. Shantideva points to the practical necessities. We need some stability in our life in order to practice. We should appreciate that that is not a given. That is our good fortune. And so, sitting here in this Dharma hall, we can appreciate our good fortune, that we are able to practice, that we have what we need to practice. And most important is bodhicitta, right? Many people encounter Buddhism, encounter the teachings, and they're not so interested, right? They don't have aspiration, they don't raise aspiration to actually practice. And this is something that Shantideva really stresses. I've been studying Shantideva again recently. And just how much of his teaching of this is about bodhicitta, appreciating its kind of precious, elusive rareness, its mystery. Where does it come from? How is it that we have this motivation? Right, that we want to wake up, that we have the notion that we could wake up, that we could be free in our lives, freer in our lives. Where does that come from? He says, you know, it comes and goes. Right, we have to tend it, having experienced bodhicitta. We shouldn't take it for granted. We have to take care of it, keep it alive, fan the flames. And so this is very much about what these mind teachings and the mind changings are about, is raising and sustaining our bodhicitta, our aspiration. And so we can rejoice in our aspiration. Appreciate that our particular karma has led us here, has led us to practice, and has aroused this mind that seeks the way, that seeks to be awake, that seeks to live our true life. And this is also, I think, practicing, pointing to this practice of acknowledging our good fortune, that is actually a practice and a mind changing, a mind turning, right? That when we look clearly, we see that we have what we need. We have what we need. If we're sitting here, we basically have what we need. This radical turning from want, to being satisfied, to acknowledging that we have what we need. And so what is it to live from a sense, to live out of gratitude and appreciation? So seeing that we have what we need and then not taking that for granted. Acknowledging our good fortune. This is a mind changing. And so finding ways to cultivate that. How do we cultivate this? How do we practice living out of appreciation, living in gratitude? I think an important way to do this is through liturgy. If you listen to the liturgy, how much of it is just that. Is making offerings. Is offering gratitude. Is bringing our attention to what is before us. If you listen to the gatha opening the sutra, it's simply saying, pay attention to see what's right before you. Appreciate that. And something that we can do in our own liturgy. So to find ways, whether it's at your altar, if you have an altar, or other maybe in a sense more simple ways to offer gratitude, to see what you have to be grateful for, and to speak that, so that that's how we bring it to mind and bring it forth, give it life. One of the other seniors recently said that gratitude is an elusive state of grace. But we can cultivate it. So just the way bodhicitta can be elusive, can come and go, so can gratitude. And we can cultivate it. We can tend to it. We can turn our mind, our attitude of mind, from want, from dissatisfaction, to appreciation. And that this practice brings us closer, brings us into our lives, closer to the truth of our lives. The second of the mind changings is understanding impermanence. This life is fleeting. It's fragile. accidents happen in an instant, and our life can be changed, our life can be over. I had a little bit of an accident recently, and it sort of has made, I've been seeing that I've been thinking about recalling the different times in my life where something could have gone very differently. Most of them in cars. Some of them when I was young. And just remembering how quickly it could have been all over. Feeling that fragility, that fleetingness. And we are all getting older. We're not going to live forever. Right? Do we really know that? That we're not going to live forever? And we have our modern, current version of version teaching reality of impermanence with the climate disaster that we're, I guess, in the midst of. We can no longer assume in the way that we have for generations that the future will be like it is, like the present, right? It's not going to be like the present. And so, again, right now we have the ability to practice. We have this a relatively stable life. We don't know that that will always be, that that will always be. You know, in our kind of human response to change, to impermanence, to death, tends to be anxiety, fear, or ignoring, trying to ignore. Trying to deny. But we should know, and part of what this the teaching is pointing to is reminding us of, is that that is not a solution, right? We cannot, this is, impermanence is the reality of our life. And so to deny it, to try and escape it, trying to turn away from it, that is actually the cause of suffering, right? We try to get away from it because that's kind of a natural reaction to things that are uncomfortable. Because that's what we're learning, is that turning away, ignoring, denying, that is a cause of suffering, not a solution. Dogen says, your body is not you. Your life is transported, moving in time without stopping even for a moment. Where has your youthful face gone? When you search for it, there is no trace. When you ponder deeply, there are many from the past whom you cannot encounter again. The pure mind does not stay. It comes and goes in fragments. Even if there is truth, it does not stay within the boundary of yourself. I was thinking recently about Daito Roshi, my first teacher, and just remembering working with him and some of how important that was, and appreciating him, appreciating that time. And really in that, feeling how he's gone and how that time is gone. He was gone the moment he died, and now he's been gone for a long time. Even the memories fade. and feeling how who was that person who was me working with him then? That person isn't here either. Who was that? Who was that? Milarepa, another great, I guess he was Tibetan master, said, "My scriptures, the teachings that I study, the sutras that I study," he says, "my scriptures are the basic state of what is. The teachings are an expression of the way things are. To find the truth, just observe what is around you. Observe our own experience. Observe your mind. Study your mind. Study your experience. The truth of impermanence is not hard to find. If we look, when we pay attention. And so this truth of impermanence is part of the mind changings because it should be a motivator, right? We don't know that things will be like they are. We don't know that we'll be able to practice. Our life is happening right now. And the truth of impermanence is the truth of impermanence. It is our life. And so this is also simply calling our attention to this basic truth of our experience, of our life. The sutra, the state of what is. This ungraspable mystery of impermanence, which is our life, which is your life. How do we live in this truth? The third of the mind changings is understanding karma. So understanding cause and effect. Which means that our actions matter. What we do has an effect. How we use our body and our speech and our mind. Has an effect. And understanding karma is also understanding that everything is workable. Right? Things are impermanent. They're not fixed. And what we do has an effect. How we use our mind has an effect. What we do in our lives has an effect. Things are workable. Shugen Roshi sometimes points out that, you know, we have the biggest impact, the biggest effect on ourselves. We are constantly affecting ourselves, influencing ourselves. And he often points out, you know, we're always practicing something, whether we know it or not, right? We're always doing something with our mind. And so what are we practicing? Right? Understanding karma, understanding cause and effect, is to call our attention to the importance of what we're doing. That it has an effect. So what are we practicing? What are we cultivating? What are we strengthening or loosening? Are we deepening our habits? What kinds of habits are those? Are they helpful ones? ones that are liberating, or ones that perpetuate, that continue to create suffering? Are we holding on to our views, deepening them? Or are we letting go, or loosening them, seeing through them, seeing that they are just a view, that they're our view, just a view? Are we practicing mindfulness, awareness? Or are we practicing distraction? We do both, and they have an effect. Pema Chodron says when we side with our sanity rather than our small-mindedness or self-absorption, we gather merit. This is a heartfelt way of making friends with oneself. I like this. Practice is a way of making friends with ourselves. She points out that, you know, we're basically good. We start with that. We are that. And we don't want to keep our goodness covered, hidden, a secret. We're whole and complete. We start that way. And we want to live completely, live in our completeness. Shantideva, these mind changings, these teachings, is trying to arouse us to care about our life. Because so often, in a sense, we don't, right? We're not a lot of the time concerned that we're caught in our self-centered habits. You know, we are conditioned beings. Right? So we have this conditioned self that has come from all of the different things that has created us. All of our history and experience and relationships and everything that creates who we are. And we can't get away from that. Right? And we're not trying to. Because we couldn't if we tried. We can only work from within our own particular conditioned, created selves. But nothing is fixed. And karma is a universal law. And so understanding that, understanding karma, can give us faith in practice. So when we may feel stuck in our particular self, our particular habits, when it may feel like this aspect of me is never going to change, that's what this mind changing is for, right? To develop trust, faith, that nothing is fixed and everything is workable. Everything is workable. The fourth of the mind changings is understanding samsara. Shantideva says, beings long to free themselves from misery, but misery itself they follow and pursue. They long for joy, but in their ignorance destroy it as they would a hated enemy. We want to be free. We want to be at peace. We want to live out of our goodness, our basic goodness. But we continually turn back to our habits that keep us stuck, that stick us, that create suffering in our actions, in our speaking, in our thinking. Einstein defined insanity as doing the same thing over and over and thinking that we'll get different results. But, you know, I think that's just kind of run-of-the-mill human delusion, right? He's describing samsara, right? That's what we all do. We're all caught in this cycle of looking for pleasure and satisfaction in ways that are never going to give us pleasure and satisfaction, are never really going to satisfy. That is suffering. And so how do we get off of that wheel? How do we rejoice rather than complaining? Practice gratitude rather than want. Because our conditioning, what we're taught, is to want. Want, want, want. And we're accustomed to that feeling of want. And I think accustomed to the dissatisfaction, or maybe inured to the dissatisfaction. And so this teaching is calling our attention to that. What is this creating in us? This want, want, want. And then getting or not getting. And the disappointment of not getting. And the more subtle disappointment of getting. That's what we really need to study. And then regardless, turning to the next thing, to the next want, in the next moment. And so again, what if we instead practiced gratitude, appreciation, appreciating what we have? And Shantideva particularly warns against samsara, not accepting samsara, not sort of giving in to samsara. Don't be satisfied with your not satisfied ways, your not satisfied experience. Don't ignore and distract from that. So I think an important part of this mind changing is convincing ourselves and reminding ourselves over and over again that this deeply habituated way of looking for satisfaction is never going to satisfy. And we have to study that more and more deeply. Sometimes it's really obvious, and that's helpful to see when it's obvious. Right? When you eat your dessert and you just want more, it didn't like satisfy you. Right? That's kind of obvious. Right? It's really important to see that. And then to see that is very subtle, and that is happening all the time. In our mind, in our thoughts, we're constantly grasping, looking. And so how do we convince ourselves, really convince ourselves, that that is not the answer, that is not actually what we want? and to remember what our aspiration is, and to cultivate our aspiration, to be free. This is what we're wanting to be free of. And we have to convince ourselves of that. We have to study that. As I was looking at this, I was thinking about how, this is also talking about turning the tendency to complain about ourselves. And this samsaric circle of our relationship with ourselves. And so the sort of grasping and dissatisfaction that we have in our relationship with the things that seem to be outside of us, well, that's pretty much the relationship that we have with the things that seem to be inside of us. Grasping and disappointment. How do we come to see ourselves as the whole, complete beings that we are? How do we turn to working with our delusion in a way that's not judgmental? It's not critical. Pema Chodron says, I can rejoice in the wisdom that allows me to courageously see my faults. I can rejoice in that. It takes courage to see our attachments, to see the habits that we have that cause disappointment, that cause suffering, to see how we get stuck. It takes courage to see them without judgment, just to see them. And I was thinking about how, this practice of giving thanks can help us to turn towards right where we are. That is the radical turning that practice asks of us and offers to us, is making a commitment to work right here. Right here in our not so exciting, normal, regular, moment-to-moment lives. It's all just right here. That's where the work is. That's where our liberation lies. Samsara and nirvana are not two different places. And so, as giving thanks can be a way to counter our tendency to look for the answer somewhere else, outside of ourselves, outside of our experience. So this radical turning to committing to work right where we are. Since accepting the circumstances right now are the circumstances that they are. My mind is my mind. So how do I work right here? When we're committed to working right here, then it just allows us to work where the work is. When there's discomfort, the work is inside. It's in my mind. The problem isn't outside. So, coming back to giving thanks, that we can practice giving thanks in a clear-eyed, honest way. We all have much to be thankful for. And to see that it's actually, that is actually good practice, helpful practice to appreciate. Izumi Roshi, apparently one of his sort of repeated phrases was simply, let us appreciate. Let us appreciate. Acknowledging our good fortune, knowing our good fortune. We don't have to build a story around that. There doesn't need to be a myth to support that. And if there is one, when we deconstruct that myth, our good fortune hasn't changed. We're not anywhere different without that story. So we don't need to be afraid of that. Whatever that story is that may be kind of propping up our sense of how we got here, who we are. If we build our lives on fiction, the truth is a threat. But if we live in accord with the way things are, that's peace. And practice takes continual effort. And so that's why these mind changings, although they're often presented as preliminaries, they are practice. They're ongoing practice, continual practice. So, having the aspiration to practice, may we practice. May we bring it into actual practice, into fruition. Having the good fortune that we have, may we appreciate that. And may we use our lives in a way that is helpful, helpful to others.
Thanks for listening. You can find more Dharma talks, interviews, and events at zmm.org/media. While online, please check out the Jizo Project, our multifaceted initiative to make Zen Mountain Monastery more accessible and welcoming to all. Learn about the new Jizo House building and accessibility enhancements to existing facilities that are just two aspects to this exciting endeavor. Find out more and see how you can get involved at zmm.org/JizoProject. That's JizoProject. J-E-C-T.